Welcome to Tiny Histories, the podcast that tells the big stories behind the small things. I'm your host, Daisha Clay. On this show, you're going to hear true stories told by the people that they happen to. Each story revolves around a person, place, or thing. Think of them kind of like historical markers in that person's life. By the way, Tiny Histories is a big endeavor run by a small crew. You can find ways to support the show, and you can find out how to share your own tiny history at tinyhistoriespodcast.com. Remember to subscribe to, rate, and review the show wherever you listen. This story from Jade Dellinger starts at Max's Kansas City nightclub in New York City in the 1960s, travels to the moon, and then ends in present-day Florida, and kind of all over the world. As I was listening to Jade's story, trying to parse out the parts that were about him personally and what parts were about the artist Robert Rauschenberg, I realized that at a point, I could not separate the two. And I think that's part of the story here. While this is ostensibly a story about this thing called the Moon Museum, it's also the story of how Rauschenberg's work has shaped and infused Jade's life from an early age. It's a story about dedication and love. You'll see what I mean. Anyway, here, I'll let him tell the story.
EAT would have these sort of unofficial meetings at a bar in New York City called Max's Kansas City. EAT, or Experiments in Art and Technology. And EAT's goal was really to find ways to collaborate and to sort of share ideas and to influence each other and to, you know, bring technology to art and artists and at the same time bring creative thinking and unusual project ideas to these world's leading, you know, researcher, scientist, engineers. And when the Apollo 11 happened, a group of these friends got together and to sort of celebrate at Max's. And in the midst of celebration, Forrest Frosty Myers apparently said, "What have we really accomplished as artists in this? And shouldn't we be thinking about humanity in a kind of different way? And as artists, shouldn't our goal be to send art to the moon? We've planted our flag nationalistically, winning the space race. And aside from that, we've really left detritus. We've left trash on the moon, trash on the moon, trash on the moon, trash on the moon." And immediately, I'm sure this killed the celebration, but essentially these engineers turned to Frosty and said, "Well, you make these giant sculptures, you know, you make these outdoor weighing thousands of pounds, sort of monumental objects. And in going to space, every ounce counts. So we would really, if you were truly interested in finding a way to send your art to the moon, you'd really have to be thinking about that. We're doing microcircuitry. So drawings by you, you know, we could reduce this to the size of your thumbnail on a tiny ceramic chip. That would be something that wouldn't interfere with and be probably acceptable to NASA. It wouldn't have magnetic properties. It could be tested. It could be tried. There was a way in which astronauts could take small objects. So they had what was called a personal preference pack, which was essentially a pocket that they carried. And in that, they would bring a roll of stamps or a tie tack or sometimes rolls of small American flags that they would sign them and give them to friends and say, you know, this has been in space or this has been to the moon or that sort of thing. So these little things. So initially in this, the idea was that they would make this tiny little object that one of the astronauts would carry in their personal preference pack, and then they would essentially drop it on the lunar surface. Frosty, remarkably and sort of generously, turned to the group and realized that he was in the company of all of these other extraordinary and in many cases sort of more famous artists, and said, "This should be really a collective effort, that this should be the best artist that America has in terms of representing culture at this moment." And Andy Warhol famously kept a table in the back room at Max's, and he was present often, and Rauschenberg, of course, and Klaus Oldenburg, David Novros, who was a close friend of Forrest Myers, and then John Chamberlain, another well-known sculptor. So essentially, you know, they all decided that they would contribute some small drawing, and that those drawings, with the help of their friends at Bell Laboratories, would find their way onto this small chip. It was made as a multiple. You'd end up with all of these sister copies of this little chip. We think in the end, 24 were made. So the idea was that each artist would receive one, and that one would find its way with an astronaut to the moon. Between Apollo 11 and Apollo 12, there was just a short window of time. And they thought that they could convince a senator to write a letter to get NASA, or to get the attention of some of these people, to make this official. And as time became shorter and shorter, they were unable to get that official permission. Ultimately, they were in fact so connected, and particularly the Bell Laboratories folks with engineers at Grumman, who were really assembling the limb and lander, they snuck this on board, the landing leg of the LM-6.
We have commit and we have liftoff at 2:13.
So it was attached, we think, to the landing leg of the LM-6, and has therefore been this unofficial, surreptitious project that has meant that there's been works of art and, in fact, a museum on the moon with these extraordinarily important artists for now more than five decades. The sort of personal story is that I had a great grandfather, Larry, who was sort of an important baseball player, but who had retired in the 1930s. And he lived until I was about 20 years of age. And he went into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1962 with Jackie Robinson. And I sort of then had grown up at a very young age going to my first museum experience. It was not a contemporary art museum, but in fact, it was going to the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown and being guided through the collections there and by the director of the Baseball Hall of Fame Museum, where they then eventually took me to a vitrine that had my great-granddad's dirty cleats and, you know, like a dirty ball cap. And as a kid, I think for me, that made me sort of question both the role of museums and why we think things are important and why we put value on things. And it really probably set my path as a curator, just because we're all about storytelling. We're all about, you know, using art, using artifacts to tell these histories. But I also, in growing up, as my great-grandfather was aging, he was always in very good physical condition, except that he had cataracts. And so he had had an operation or two, and our routine on the weekends was that even into his 90s, well into his 90s, he would get dozens of fan letters. And so we would go through those, that fan mail, and I would read to him these letters, and he would respond. He was always very generous about like signing autographs. I got to read and came to understand that you could really reach anyone with a letter at the time. You know, if you wrote a letter, if you had someone's physical address, you could put something in their hand potentially, and you could reach your heroes. So I started to learn about art and get interested in artists. And so about age 14, I thought I would write a fan letter to Bob Rauschenberg. And so this was my initial connection, in that I found an article about Rauschenberg. They had interviewed him. They had come to Florida. They had been at Captiva Island, which is very nearby where the Bob Rauschenberg Gallery is. And Bob was well known for being a real character, but also one who was a big drinker. And so they sort of spelled out his daily routine, which included walking from his beach house a couple of hundred yards down the beach to a bar that he frequented. And he would have a drink and watch the sunset if he was in Florida. I mean, if he was in town, kind of thing. So hearing that story, I found the address for the bar that he hung out at, which was called the Mucky Duck Pub. And I wrote this letter to Mr. Robert Rauschenberg, care of the Mucky Duck Pub, thinking, of course, that he would walk in and that they'd make fun of him, that basically, you know, Bob, you're here so much, you're getting your mail, isn't this enough? And so assuming that that was the case, then my letter went on to have a PS saying, enclosed is $10, let me buy you a drink. And sure enough, about a week later, I think, there was a knock at our door, and my parents were baffled that the postman was here and needed a signature from me. But he was bringing a tube, a large mailing tube, and it was postmarked Captiva. And inside was a handwritten note that said, I'll have that drink and wish you luck just before I go to work tonight. I've put a gift in your pocket, best RR. And then there was this lithograph. He'd just come back from China that was inscribed to me from Bob Rauschenberg. So Rauschenberg, you know, even then at age 14, 15, as I was sort of naively once again beginning to understand his work and understand what he was about, both was incredibly generous with me as a kid, but we had this sort of personal exchange. I remembered, you know, learning about in college, in studying art history, Bob Rauschenberg's relationship to NASA and to experiments in art and technology. But with all of that, maybe, you know, a decade ago, I happened to be searching an online auction, and I think I must have been searching Rauschenberg, but something came up, much to my amazement, and it was listed with very little specifics except to say that, you know, this person's grandfather or something had been an engineer, they'd worked at Grumman, and that this was something that was thought to have been sent to the moon. And I think they mentioned maybe Warhol, maybe Rauschenberg. I don't think all the artists were even listed in the listing. And it just, I completely blew my mind. I won that it was popping up on eBay, but I was at the time an independent curator, and I was sort of doing shows with a number of museums. I thought, I'm going to write to them and I should try to curate or build an exhibition out of this idea, including this tiny object. But, you know, maybe we could make an exhibition for the Tampa Museum of Art or the Contemporary Art Museum in Tampa. So when I wrote to the seller just seemed to want some money for it. And they basically had said to me, I just want the money that I'm asking. So they sold it to me. So I actually own one of these incredibly scarce sister copies of the one that resides on the moon for all of these years. At the moment, we kind of know the whereabouts of a number of them that have not been lost. I mean, it's the smallest object in the Museum of Modern Art's permanent collection. One has just been acquired by the National Gallery in Washington, D.C. Andy Warhol's is in the Andy Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh. Rauschenberg's is still with his foundation. The same with Klaus Oldenburg. It's in his personal collection. But as many of the artists have now passed, one, many things were lost. As I've understood it, John Chamberlain had given his to a girl in a bar or something like that, and then had always been asking Frosty for another copy of the Moon Museum, which of course he couldn't provide. He had the copy that he had. And so, you know, we probably know of the whereabouts these days of about a dozen of them, but it was remarkable to me, one, to then be able to obtain this object. And in many ways, it sort of changed my life. As soon as I arrived as director of the gallery, I felt it was important to feature and to show the Moon Museum. When Rauschenberg died, he died in 2008. There were memorials in Houston, in Los Angeles, in New York. President Clinton spoke at his memorial. I mean, it was a big thing. There were multiple obituaries in the New York Times. David Byrne of the Talking Heads wrote an obituary about Bob. You had just this incredible outpouring. And there was one here with more than 1,000 people that attended, including his partner and studio assistants and, you know, family members. But in trying to make exhibitions with him once again, when I became director, it felt important to me to really begin by talking about his prominence in the world and also ultimately, I guess, extraterrestrially by having sent this project to the moon. So we did that. We made a little exhibition. And part of my mission has been to really think about extending his legacy, think about his place in the world, to revisit some of those places. He was the first Western contemporary artists to have major solo exhibitions in China and in the Soviet Union in the 1980s and in Chile under Pinochet and in Cuba. He was invited by Fidel to stay at his beach house. I mean, he did these things with politics not being a part of the discussion, nor with a real political agenda, except to say that he thought art could be used as a tool to spread a message about peace through the world. And he wanted to go to places that were very difficult for Americans to travel to during this maybe decade-long period when he did what was called Rauschenberg Overseas Cultural Interchange, or ROTI. He announced it, in fact, on the floor of the General Assembly at the United Nations before he began this tour. And I think the Moon Museum was an early indicator of both his collaborative spirit, but also his much broader vision. The idea that this tiny chip, smaller than the size of your thumbnail and about as thin, resonates so broadly as such a giant sort of impactful idea, and that it was done without permission, I think is really fantastic, and that it remains still a little unknown. I've had now 5 or 6 invitations through the U.S. State Department to go to some of the places Bob went. And actually, I've been giving these talks about the Moon Museum and about Rauschenberg and about experiments in art and technology. And then as a sort of exhibition in my pocket, I have been, at the end of the lecture, pulling out this tiny object and letting everyone rush up and see it and touch it and handle it. So it's been kind of wonderful to do that in Caracas and Maracaibo, Venezuela, or to go where I'm in armored cars with the State Department, and or going to Zhytomyr, Ukraine, where the Sergei Korolev Space Museum is, to give a lecture, or Kiev. But it's so portable. It's so easy to do. Can you easily be snuck in your front pocket anywhere you might care to go? And the response has been remarkable everywhere I've gone. We built a major exhibition around the Moon Museum at the National Gallery in Tbilisi, Georgia. And, you know, cosmonauts were there, and National Geographic sort of sponsored the publication. And we had all of these people get involved in this thing, as tiny as it is. It just, again, is such a big idea.
Jay Dellinger is the director of the Bob Rauschenberg Gallery at Florida Southwestern State College. He's written for lots of art publications and is the co-author of the book, Are We Not Men? We Are Devo. He is also, hands down, one of the coolest people I've ever talked to, and I hope we get to have a drink one day. Many thanks to Jade for telling his story, and to Jack Massing for posing as Jade via email and submitting his story. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Tiny Histories. We hope it got you thinking about your own stories, and if it did, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us your story at tinyhistoriespodcast.com, and if you do, we might just hit you up to share your story on the podcast or in the Tiny newsletter. You can find a link to the Tiny newsletter, show notes and photos of our storytellers, ways to engage with us, and ways to support the show at tinyhistoriespodcast.com. Tiny Histories is written, hosted, and produced by me, Daisha Clay. Our theme music is by the inimitable Nat Evans. To find out more about Nat, go to natevansmusic.com. Tiny Histories is a production of Pillow Fort Studios.